Welcome to The Road Untraveled. Today we have none other than Nehal Mehta, five-time founder and founding managing partner of ENIAC Ventures. Nehal has built companies, sold companies, invested in companies, and I'm looking forward to learning a lot about his experience across the venture and tech ecosystem. Today, Nehal and I will explore the upcoming shifts in the consumer business model, opportunities across traditional industries, as well as why it's a great time to be building a company. This is The Road Untraveled.
Hey, Nehal, how's it going?
Hey, how are you, Brian?
Good. Thanks so much for joining me. For everyone that's joining, Nehal Mehta is founding general partner at ENIAC Ventures. He has tremendous experience on the operating side as a five-time founder, most recently as CEO of Local Response, where he grew revenue over 2,000% in 3 years and landed them on the Inc. 5,000 fastest growing companies. Nehal started investing well before ENIAC into companies such as Uber, AdMob, and SwiftKey, just to name a few. Nehal, I'm super excited to chat with you today. Let's just start off by discussing the ENIAC portfolio. Obviously, a lot of your time, you know, probably gets shifted from sourcing to triaging and portfolio management. I'm curious some of the things that you're doing for your portfolio that you think have been helpful and some of the best practices you would share with other investors out there.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think myself, like a lot of other experienced investors and operators out there, have worked through a couple cycles like this before, 01 and 08. And I think, or at least a couple cycles, depending on how old you are. I just dated myself, but we, it's all about survival, and it's about, 18 months of runway. And it's about, runway without revenues, if possible, or at least your revenue forecast is going to be significantly affected. That's what we learned kind of past two cycles. And I think that those same truths hold here. So how do companies get runway? Obviously, unfortunately, you have to make some cuts, some really tough decisions. Yeah. And some cuts. If they can top up rounds now, we're seeing some of our best companies go and raise rounds when they can to add to the balance sheet. Obviously, if they think they can apply and benefit for and qualify for some of the government loans, they should. So, I think kind of all of the above, we're just helping them survive.
Yeah. I'm curious if you think about the shape of an enterprise portfolio versus a consumer portfolio right now, obviously in consumer, for many companies, top line has just been turned off. SaaS has some helpful features in this type of time around just the recurring nature of it. But, what are you seeing in the consumer markets and how do you think that plays out over the next 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, I think Tim Armstrong said it best last week. It's like, this is like an unprecedented dichotomy between time spent on media and advertising dollars put to it.
Yep.
We're all working from home. We're like just glued to. By the way, Netflix just announced earnings and, they're 2x over their estimated number of new subscribers. So it's, people are consuming media like never before, but, ad dollars are not flowing. So the reason I bring that up is that is, essentially the core business model for majority of consumer businesses out there. And if there's no ad revenue, then I think these businesses are going to be starved to be supported, unless they're consumer subscription businesses like, Spotify and a number of companies in our portfolio. But I think for the most part, it's going to be tough. I think consumer business is always tough in recessions.
Yeah. What are you have the hindsight of investing through to your point a little maybe more than just one of these turns. What are some of the biggest differences in your opinion? What is it that's going to make it so hard this time for some businesses to survive?
I think one of our friends Andrew Yang said this best. It's like this was like 10 years of digital transformation in 10 weeks. And businesses were just forcing function of distributed team workforce and working from home and Zoom, was a huge, massive forcing function from businesses to digitally transform their workflows. And a lot of businesses just can't, you know, can't. The businesses that cannot, that rely on brick and mortar, that that rely on, you know, physical presence, are negatively affected, are going to be very negatively affected during this time. And they already are. I mean, the 800 pound gorilla, you saw SoftBank's reneg of WeWork. You know, but I think that whole category, which was, by the way, flying high, you know, over a year ago, I think that whole category is hit hard. Some of the businesses are forced to transform to create, you know, virtual types of events, but it's not the same. So I think high level, the businesses that can't adapt are going to get left behind. You know, there's a ton of massive GDP sectors like construction, real estate, insurance, healthcare, that fortunately, I'd say a lot of them are transforming very, very quickly. Investors like us, like at ENIAC, have always been fans of digital of software that helps augment digital transformation, especially of these old school industries. So, you know, we're hoping that a lot of our companies can be helpful, you know, in the transformation. But yeah, if you don't adapt, this is it. You know, this is the ultimate kind of Darwinism, you know, for business.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about someone who may be building right now. Any advice you may have for founders that are in the early stage of trying to build a business through this, who, you know, may have been going out to potentially raise capital for the first time in the next couple months and is obviously having to second guess that.
You know, it's interesting. I think I had a great call with a founder just an hour ago, who was one of my former CTOs of past startups. And we were talking about, and also talking about Mark Andreessen's recent blog post on it's the time to build. I think it's definitely the time to build. It's not the time to sell, you know, but if you can take this year to build something really innovative, right? And then when market flips back over, be in market at that time, it's all about timing, then that's a good way to spend this time, right? It's a bad way to spend this time calling up customers. You're selling to local SMBs like restaurants, pretty bad time for calling them to buy something. Even the Fortune 5000, you know, CTOs are, you know, in terms of new software procurement, this is last on their list. You know, they're also worried about survival. So, but this is the time to build. So in other words, if you can go and raise some capital and invest it in CapEx, invest it in something, you know, any business that takes time to get off the ground, this is that time to do that. And, you know, it's often frustrating for us entrepreneurs or investors when you raise money and then you spend a bunch of time, could take a couple of years before you launch a product, right? And those couple of years are almost like an opportunity cost in terms of, you know, not selling at the right time. So align this time, you know, as best you can. And so what I was telling this founder is like, it's a great time to build what you're talking about, because it'll take you a year to build it. And, in a year.
When it's ready. Yeah.
When it's ready, you can go sell it. Like, perfect. You know, you know, of course, easier said than done. Like raising capital today is also very challenging. You know,
do you think we see any shift in business model? So, you know, to your point, like, not that scars necessarily will exist, but like, is a consumer business going to be a little more insulated against the potential of this again? And if we look at the sort of business model that takes shape over the next 12 months, or do you think we try to forget about this and you just try to build the best consumer sort of traditional business you can?
I mean, I think in any, you know, any of these downturns, people, you know, really shine, entrepreneurs shine when they can show something that is, that is defensible. You know, things like moats are very clearly illuminated during downturns. So an example would be, you know, we just spoke about Netflix earlier, like monthly subscribers, right? if you provide a service, Amazon with Amazon Prime, Netflix with monthly subs, you know, that has growth in subscribers in an up economy or a down economy, you know, you are going to benefit from that versus relying on the delta of advertising budgets that come and go in bear markets, right? So certainly some business models are going to show themselves far more superior than others. You know, in the enterprise world, this is why we love SaaS, you know? And, you know, locking customers into, you know, 2 to 3 year contracts, which by the way, pre-COVID was not unheard of. Where maybe a chunk of that is paid up front at a discount to help with cash flow. Like that business model,
not a bad place to
that
be.
That business model completely checks out now. And I think post COVID, I think folks are going to realize that, okay, like we should have had this and we need this now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. Let's spend a little bit of time just thinking about, you know, institutional fundraising. So, you know, obviously you're not on your first fund anymore. I think it's sort of fund four, or fund five for ENIAC at this point. You know, what are the LP discussions that you're having? What are some of the questions that institutional investors are asking, and how are you kind of preparing to brace yourself for having to raise funds in the future post this environment?
Yeah, I think, it's definitely on every fund manager's mind right now. We're finishing up fund four and we're flipping over to fund five end of the year or early next year. You know, we're very fortunate to have a great group of institutional LPs. So, you know, endowments, pension funds, fund of funds. And so I think, you know, those folks are also very fairly sophisticated. They've invested in downturns before. And we've also been fortunate to create a great relationship with them. So, you know, we had a close pre-COVID on the majority of the fund. And so we're very happy. Obviously, we did that. Now, we are also a fund four going to fund five, right, with all funds that have been very well top decile or quartile performers. So we're very lucky. I think folks that are raising fund ones right now are even fund twos, because you never necessarily have real metrics, TVPI or DPI, by the time you raise a fund two. I think those funds, it's going to be tough, you know. I think it's going to be really tough. I mean, fortunately, last year was a very, very frothy environment where a lot of new fund ones, especially in New York, were raised. And we're LPs in a bunch of them, and you know, they all got closed. So, you know, I think that's good for the market, where there's a lot, you know, there is a good supply of capital at the early stage for sure, in New York and of course in the Bay Area. But I think if you were planning on starting a venture fund in 2020, and it's your fund one, you might have to, you know, you might have to rethink that for a year and a half.
Oh, absolutely. I know you spend a ton of time with MBAs and sort of speaking at different business schools. It, obviously applicable to me here as well. I'm curious, you know, how you would start to assess the different opportunities that MBAs come out with. Obviously, you know, venture, consulting, PE, there's sort of so many different angles. And over the years, the hot or sexy vertical or industry sort of prevails. I'm curious if there's anything in particular that you think would be interesting for business school students to keep an eye on as this continues to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great time to build something. Especially as folks are graduating, you know, this is just like when people are graduating in 01 or 08, you know, it's actually a lot worse. The unemployment has never been this high. And so the number of jobs out there just don't exist. And so to the extent that that can be a forcing function for you to create something, like there's no better time if you think about it. Right. Versus like getting involved in spinning your wheels, applying to, you know, dozens of jobs and doing all these interviews to get nothing, or getting something that you don't love. you know, versus like, oh yeah, I was thinking about this at school, or this is like a pain point in the back of my mind. Like, you know, I know these engineers, they're also unemployed. Like maybe we can get together and just build something, you know? Especially coming out of school when you don't have crazy expenses, you know, you don't have your, hopefully, you know, don't have dozens of kids and, you know, whatever, and mortgages. So your burn is relatively low. It's a great time. It's a great time to start something. And you know what? The best experience is starting something and failing at it. And, you know, that's what I talk about a lot. My very first startup was in 1999, and it went bankrupt in 2001. So I had to file for bankruptcy when I was like a young, you know, young and early 20s. And it was the most humbling experience of my career. And I look back on it now, 20 years later, I was like, that was the best experience that I had in my career, because when you face failure and you recover from it, you feel invincible. And you know what? That was fine. I was a victim of the dot-com crash in 01. And I wasn't the only startup. You know, there were hundreds, thousands, right? And so the takeaway is, I think it's a good time to fail. And when you're thinking about your next move, I wouldn't settle for something you don't love. I wouldn't waste your time spinning your wheels, dozens of interviews. I'd go and just build something you think needs to be in the world.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for doing this, man. This was really cool.
Yeah, man, that was fun. Thank you for having me. Hopefully I inspired you to go build something.
You definitely did, and I look forward to taking you up on that, and someday bringing something special to the
nice.
EMAC portfolio.
And Brian, yeah, let me know if I can be helpful with anything. Really appreciate, you know, you thinking of me for this, and as you're thinking about your next move, I know you have Lightspeed, but and obviously, be awesome to work with you on that side as well. But happy to bounce ideas off, you know, and help with anything.
I appreciate it. Nahal Mehta, founding general partner at ENIAC Ventures. Thanks so much for joining me. Really
awesome, Brian. Thanks so much. Cheers.
Okay, take care.